from State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, let's talk some Bears because I know he's hot about the Bears and he can't wait till Bears and Rams. I believe Michael may even join us in studio next Monday. Michael Wilbon every Wednesday at 5 o'clock is brought to you by Waddle's guys over at HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big!
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day.
Woo-hoo!
Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
All right, can't wait. 5-1 Bears against the Rams, but how good are they? Michael, when your brother calls you or texts you, or Tony would say, hey, how good are the Bears? How do you answer?
I don't know yet. Yeah, because I don't really know. I'm fine. I saw some headline on something I was reading a few hours ago that says the Bears lucky or good. Well, hell, they've been good some years. I remember a year they were pretty darn good, and maybe good enough to win the NFC and went 10-6 and didn't get in the playoffs. They needed some luck, so I'll take some luck. I'm not ashamed to court luck, but I don't know yet. They're better than I thought they were. I mean, they've beaten, you know, beating Tampa was obviously a really, really good win. I thought beating Carolina was a really good win. Those weren't like the first three wins against the Giants and Lions and who am I missing? Somebody else, Atlanta. You know, those are bad teams. The last two teams were not bad teams. So, they're better. I think I told you guys in a text, I think I told you and Tommy in a text, I remember so many coaches that I have covered, quite a few, believed in the old coaching adage, you know, first you win, then you get good, and not the other way around. And so I kind of believe that. And they won those games first, and now they're starting to get good. Now, how good? You know, we'll continue to find out. If they beat Tampa, Carolina, which had won three in a row, and then the Rams on the road consecutively, then that, to me, that speaks to, let's not talk about luck, let's talk about how good they are.
What, you know, so first you win, then you get good, like you just said. How much confidence do you have that the offense gets good this year?
Well, it's going to get better. Is it going to be great? No, doesn't look like it. I mean, maybe. We've seen units hit their stride, you know, midseason. We're not even quite midseason yet. And they've done that. Could the Bears' offense do that? Yeah, the Bears' offense doesn't have to be great. Was the 2006 offense great? No. They lost the Super Bowl. They weren't as good as, obviously, the opposite number, Peyton Manning's offense, with multiple Hall of Famers on that offense. They weren't that good, but they got to the Super Bowl with an offense that was opportunistic, and obviously the special teams were historically great with Devin Hester and Robbie Gould. The defense is really good and could be great. Special teams look really good. I don't know if they're going to be great, but really good. And the offense, I mean, it looks opportunistic. I mean, Foles has never been a guy who's going to complete 73% of his passes and be efficient and just sort of chucking it down after down. That's not been his success even when he was a Super Bowl champion. So the offense can be better, Sylvie. Is it going to be great? I don't see that. But I don't see that being necessary either to make the playoffs and being able to, you know, clip a team or two along the way.
Yeah, and we brought up a lot of the running issues and the commitment to the run and end of games. Like, I talked again today. Like, I could separate. I like the head coach, but I don't like their offensive coordinator. The issue is he's the same dude. You know, the OC is the head coach. The head coach is 25-13, but the guy who's calling the plays – I think he needs to get a lot better, and especially at the end of games.
Well, certainly at the end of the last game, I know they won it, and you can say you count on your defense, and they're going to come up with an interception on the first play. But they should have been running the ball, just listening to I'm drawing a blank on my man who was doing the color for Miami, linebacker.
Jonathan Vilma.
Jonathan Vilma. Vilma was great. Vilma called most of the Bears games. Yeah. I thought he was great. I thought he was great before. But Vilma was great because Vilma talked along the way in live time about what it is that he thought needed to be done in order to make it easy. Look, victory can be achieved a number of ways, but you don't want to have to jump through hoops of fire to get it done. And if you run the ball, you take enough time off the clock where they don't even have that opportunity to have a full set of downs and over and a minute and a half left. You don't want them having that opportunity. And Vilma spoke to that very forcefully, I thought. And I enjoyed listening to him. And he's done several Bear games, and I enjoyed listening to him because he's got a real feel sense to me of what it is that the Bears can do, don't do as well, and ought to be trying to do. So I realized they won the game, and I thought Nagy was particularly good talking afterward about, I'm not going to concentrate on a bunch of other stuff. That wouldn't be fair to the team. And I thought that was really, I thought he did that in a way that was very believable. But going forward, man, you have to, clock management and game situation management are paramount in a league where, especially when you have a team, you are not so good you can go out there and make it up by scoring 38 points in a game. You don't have that. So everything else has got to be not perfect, but closer to. And that end of game was not ideal. Not ideal at all. And I don't need to dwell on it, Sylvie, but, you may not get that opportunity. You may have to play it closer to perfect against the Rams on the road this week to win Monday night.
As far as Foles is concerned, I think you, if I'm correct, you were a fan of what he said in the post game, weren't you?
Oh, 100%. Yes. I mean, I was ready to run through a wall for him after that. Yes. Because he said, we know we got a lot of room. We got a lot of work. Yes. I thought Foles was great. And I thought that that's the kind of thing that if they weren't already behind him, and they were, indications are they were, that kind of show of honest emotion, there was nothing phony about that. There was nothing phony about it. Not to me. And who wouldn't follow Foles if they heard him, say that, or if he said similar things in a similar tone in the locker room after the game and during this week?
I said, I asked you guys, and I brought this up on the show, neither you or Waddle answered me in the text chain. You guys paid no mind to me at that point. But I
what
asked
did we
you,
miss?
Well, I asked you, Waddle said the same thing to me when I brought that up. I asked both of you guys, when was the last time, and this isn't about skill, this is about the leadership quality that Foles has, like you were just saying. When was the last time you believed in the quarterback as a leader like Nick Foles?
Jim McMahon.
It's that far?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be? I mean, guys like Jim Miller, there were guys who had moments. There were guys who had moments. But come on, seriously, when? He played for the Lions first, and he threw for fourth. Eric Kramer, he had moments in which he played to a level that Bear quarterbacks don't often do. Miller did the same thing. But they weren't in there in a sustained way with a complete team that was going to allow them to be the leader of the team, were they? Was that the case? Who
No.
was the quarterback on the team that went 13-3 that Urlacher and Mike Brown and all
those
guys?
That was Jim Miller, right.
Back to back, that was Miller. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe Miller. Maybe Miller was. But Urlacher was the unquestioned leader of that team. And then Briggs and then Brown. They were all on the defensive side of the ball, to me, from what I remember.
Of course, yeah.
So then we got to go back. And I don't think we're stopping in the 90s. They didn't do anything in the 90s.
Kramer just, a couple of years.
Kramer had some big years in terms of statistics, but he wasn't that kind of guy. I mean, McMahon. And McMahon was a different, completely different kind of player and leader and all that. But I just thought Foles was good Sunday. I thought his post game was really important because I think the post game wasn't just the post game. The post game must have been the way he was with his teammates in the immediate aftermath of that game ending.
Right.
And so presuming he was, I got to think that played well with his team.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely, that's what I liked most. And then I said to Waddle that I liked that he revealed that they were talking about this in the locker room after the game. That yes, they were hyped about winning, but him and Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller and David Montgomery, they're all in the locker room saying, boy, we got to do things better.
Yeah, I love that. And that was, it was honest, it was candid. And I just think that if you look, you know, look, I've gotten to know so many great Bears defensive players over my life. And I know how even if they never said it, there was often a resentment of the offense. Sylvie, you know this. Because mm-hmm. You know guys who have told us that privately years later. Well, so you can head that off. You can head that off if you are going right to your guys and saying, my bad. You know, so I just think that's an important thing for the entire team to hear when everybody's struggling and talking about togetherness. If you show it, I think it's much more believable, and they believe in you as a leader.
All right, if you're a team that's good and you need a receiver because you have a void there, would you have any confidence in signing Antonio Brown?
None. Zero. We know what Antonio Brown is. He's a clown. He's disruptive. No. I don't want Antonio Brown. I'm not saying there's some teams that couldn't sort of handle him better than other teams. But the Patriots would have been one of those teams, right?
Yeah, well, they
the
were.
Patriots
they...
with Tom Brady. Okay, but it lasted 1 week.
1 week.
No. I don't want clowns in any sport. No. I've learned from the great Hall of Fame players who had to be true leaders on teams. I've learned from guys in every locker room. No, you don't want that. And there's sometimes it's an exception, but Antonio Brown ain't one of them. Not for me.
Yeah. I was saying the same thing. After what he did with the helmet, like that was one of the weirdest
controversies.
He's done
all kinds of, he took movies of Mike Tomlin giving a post game, talking to the team in the locker room. No, I don't want Antonio Brown.
All right.
Not under any circumstances do I want him.
All right, there's a couple of Bulls nuggets I want to throw your way.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the Blackhawks chose to rebuild. I want to know what you think about that. So more with Michael Wilbon coming up next. Michael Wilbon continues to join us 5 o'clock every Wednesday. Love talking to Michael. Waddle is out today. He's visiting his parents in Tennessee. But we'll be back talking Bears, getting set for Monday Night Football next Monday. Michael, before we get to some of the Bulls stuff and other things, you ready for Big Ten football?
Yeah, I am. I think that's going to finally drag me all the way into college football. Because I've been saying every week, Sylvie, that I was going to get more into it that week, and I don't do it.
Right.
And the only thing I can conclude is that I need my own conference to be playing. And then it helps me not just watch Big Ten football, but get into everything.
Yeah.
And I'll watch more ACC that way. I'll watch more SEC. And a lot of times, you know, Northwestern has the early game, not the case this week, like a 6:30 game against Maryland. But Northwestern often has the early game at 11 o'clock. And whether I'm there or watching it on TV, it helps me get going. Like a good starter, good appetizer for me. So that won't be the case this week, but hopefully I'm just going to get into the college football season, period, because I love it. And here we are, middle of October, and I haven't really indulged. So, you know, not middle, late October. I haven't a week left, and I haven't gotten into it. So hopefully this will lead me into that.
And speaking of the SEC, I'm sure you and Tony talked about this today. Tua now is going to start his first game since playing at Alabama. Were you surprised that the Dolphins did what they did with Fitzmagic?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, you've just got a guy coming off a hell of a game, and you're winning, and you're a game out of, a game behind Buffalo in that division, you know, slightly ahead of the Patriots. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And if, you know, the notion that, well, he's ready. Okay, well, maybe you don't know he's ready, but we'll find out. We'll find out if he's ready. We're going to find out. You know, I know he's got a bye week, but it just seems unnecessary to me if you're trying to win now. And the NFL winning now, if you're in position to do that, seems to be all that should matter. I don't get it.
Like, do you think the veterans in the locker room are upset because they were winning? Or do you think they're like, oh, yeah, now it's on. Now the future is now because Tua's here.
I don't think players react that way. I think most players are looking at their own situation. And maybe a few players will do that if they know him or if they're tight with him off the field. But I don't know that players look at it like we look at it from the outside in terms of measuring it and analyzing it to death. I don't know if they do that. I've generally speaking, I think that about sports, no matter what the sport is. So we're going to find out about Miami. I mean, they've made themselves a curiosity now by benching Fitzpatrick and going to Tua.
A couple of local teams I want to hit on. I don't know if you saw the tweet and the email that the Hawks sent out yesterday.
I did not.
Stan Bowman was doing the rounds. They are now at least publicizing that they are rebuilding.
Wow.
Now what that means when you still have Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith, and then obviously you still have Kane and Taves. Like, are you still in no man's land because you still have those veterans and that core? Can you do both where you can rebuild and retool?
Wow, man, that seems hard to think that they could. I mean, I thought last year, they thought that their second half of the season showed them enough with their good young players to think they could combine, you know, those two elements and contend next year. But apparently not, if Bowman doesn't think so.
Yeah, no, and there, a lot of people thought that maybe McDonough was the guy in the room who kept saying, no, we can't rebuild, we can't afford to do that. We have guys who sell now, and we have to keep playing them. But
yeah,
it's and a lot of Hawks fans are not confident in Bowman doing the job, doing the work.
Well, that's certainly a sad pronouncement. I mean, just because you have those four players left. And, you know, look, they got rid of Crawford, but they still had the four, and you're thinking, okay, they can still be at the center of this nucleus that gives this a shot. And now what we're saying based on yesterday's news is that's not the case. And yeah, I mean, nobody wants to hear that their team is going to rebuilding takes a few years and it is never certain. It's never certain. And those four guys, they were a certainty you could bet on for a while. I mean, what, two other conference finals appearances that could have gone, you know, could have added to two more.
Right, 09 and 14.
Playing the championship. Yeah, that was, I was sitting there with Charles Barkley, and I sat there for game seven when we lost in overtime on that deflected goal. And, you know, they came so close to five appearances and five. And, you know, which just becomes an amazing number three, as incredible as it is. So it's just sad to hear as a fan. I don't follow anything in the NHL like I follow in the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL.
Sure.
But as a fan, I do, and I'm sorry to hear that.
All right, so let me get to the Bulls then. And there were a couple of good articles, one by Casey Johnson on NBC, and I think the other one was also on NBC by Tom Haberstroh, who does the national NBA. And they both had to do with the Bulls, with the draft coming up. We're finally getting closer to the draft, and we can zero in on that. The Bulls pick fourth. And Haberstroh is hearing that the Bulls could be one of these teams that could go up and get the number one pick from Minnesota or get the number two pick for the Warriors. And Casey has floated it out there that maybe Zach LaVine is one of these guys. We're going to find out soon. What does Karnishevis think, that he is a builder around guy, or is he a better guy to go out to get something for, because he's really good and he's on a good contract? So what would you think about both, trading up for the draft and possibly moving LaVine?
Well, LaVine's not a number one. And I'm not sure he's a number two. Maybe if the one was like Antetokounmpo, you know, that strong a one, then maybe he would be. But I like him. I mean, I like the ensemble they put together. Look, I like the hiring of Billy Donovan. I like starting with the concept, not concept really, just the real practical application of player development. I mean, the Bulls have been pretty weak in that area lately.
Yes.
Like, they draft these guys who show flashes. Like, you know, we keep going back. I keep going back to Lauri Markkanen having 30 and 20 on opening night and disappearing for months. If you can get me 30 and 20, then you got something in you. And clearly Zach LaVine's got something in him. The rook from North Carolina last year, Kobe White, he's got something in him. I think the kid from Duke still, I think he has something in him. I liked drafting him 2 years ago. Like, so I'm good with player development. Let's see what these guys have. If the Bulls did not make a move, a trade move at all, and they just used the draft pick, like, I keep hoping they'll get Obi Toppin to add to this group and then have a couple of really dynamic, just forceful, talented wing players. The league is about wings now. I mean, it is. You got to have terrific wing players. You got to have multiple guys between sort of 6'5 and 6'9 who can do everything on the basketball court. Well, is Toppin one of those guys? If the Bulls drafted him fourth and kept him, could he be one of those guys? I mean, some people think that he has every single tool offensively to be one of those. And if he's paired, you know, with Zach LaVine, and you put pressure on defenses with two just sort of dynamic athletic wings, what does that do? What does that do for the other guys that the Bulls have drafted? Are these players that can be developed? Are they not? I mean, these questions are going to have to be answered. But if he's going to go and trade up to number one, then what are you going to get with one? Like, I don't like Ball.
You don't?
No, I don't. Wiseman, I like. But in today's game, I mean, what's going to help you more and quicker? A guy like Toppin or Wiseman?
So you don't think LaMelo Ball can be a great point guard?
No, I don't. I just think there are too many problems. I think there are too many issues. Maybe he will. I don't want to say I doubt his talent, but talent's not the only ingredient. And so if you ask me if I was pulling the trigger, I'd be in that war room fighting for Toppin over Ball. That's me. I'm not going to say I would fight for him over Wiseman, but I might. And that's two other guys. So that's three. Who's another guy? And I'm not big on the Georgia kid, who I know that Minnesota could take first. Not particularly big on him. I would take. I like Toppin, and I like the Bulls spotted four if he's still left. I'm afraid Golden State's going to take him.
Yeah,
but I like Toppin.
I like that we're finally getting in focus where we can talk a little Bulls draft. Before we let you go, World Series, are you into it? A lot of people,
yes.
You are. You like the matchup.
Yeah, and not even the matchup. I just the World Series, people don't, you know, I mean, people even listening don't know the tie of the Dodgers owner, Mark Walter. The Dodgers owner who is very tied to Chicago. First of all, Iowa is an Iowa boy went to University of Iowa, but also went to Northwestern for graduate school and is a trustee at Northwestern. And so that's how I've gotten to know him. And a guy who for years you could see sitting courtside at Bulls games on the floor, he and his wife. So Mark is he's the Dodgers owner, you know, and just a really, really small. Oh, And let me not leave out, even though it's the Ryan Fieldhouse, I think, but the facility indoors is named after Mark, which means a hefty donation to one of his two alma maters. So I've got to know him. He's a dynamic owner, and just you know, when you, how many owners do you get to know personally? I'm rooting for him and the Dodgers, and obviously Magic's involvement with the Dodgers. And my friendship with Irvin, it goes back. So we were both about 20 years old. So I'm, you know, it's personal. Who do you root for? You root for your friends. My God.
Right,
I mean,
right.
So I'm rooting for them. It's nothing against Tampa. I don't know anybody with Tampa. So I'm rooting for the Dodgers, who also have an irresistible storyline. It's so funny that people in LA think they're, you know, suffering because they haven't had a World Series for 32 years. It's like, please stop.
Yeah, that's,
you know, when you get to like 100 and you get to 100 years, let me know. So, but I am. I'm rooting for the Dodgers, but I'm into it. I'm into tonight's game, too. This whole notion of what essentially amounts to a bullpen night for Dodger pitchers. They really only have two starters that they bank on. And, you know, they're going against a recent Cy Young Award winner in Matt Snell with Tampa. Yeah, I'm into it. I'm into this World Series. I'd be more into it, you know, if the Cubbies or God, even if the White Sox were in it, I'd be more into it. But I'm into it pretty heavily.
Of course. All right. So we'll talk to you on Monday. Is that do I have that right?
Monday. You still in? Yes, good. Sir. You got me. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know what to expect from that game. The last time the Bears had a big game with the Rams, the Bears won. Wasn't that a Sunday night game?
Against the Rams?
Yeah.
But because they played them twice. Ago? They played them last year, too, and lost on national TV. When Mitch got benched.
Okay, yeah. I blocked last year out of my mind.
Yeah, we all did.
Back
yes.
To 18 in the 12-4 season. But so I'm looking forward to this to see if, you know, if that defense can rattle a quarterback who, you know, looks great when he's got time and less so when he doesn't. And what can the Bears defense, what can the Monsters do about that? So I'm fired up for Monday night, yeah.
All right, we'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks, Michael.
See you there.
There you go. Michael Wilbon. I believe he's gonna be in studio on Monday. And I do know that Mark Jean Greco is in the First Midwest Bank studio, and he is gonna join us next. All right, it's time for Mark Jean Greco in the First Midwest Bank studio. Waddle is out of town. He'll be back.
Yeah, I thought he was here. His cutout.
That's his cutout.
See, you know, Abdallah just abusing me, just
what's
disrespecting
going on behind
me,
the scenes?
And black covering for me. That's the way it is every day.
During the commercial break, Sylvie.
It was a good like 4 minutes into the break, too. Jean Greco had been in the studio for like a good 5 minutes.
Abdallah goes into Mark's headset and goes, "Hey, by the way, Waddle's not here today." Mark's singing there by himself. Of course Waddle's not here today.
To which Chris says, "How old do you think Mark is? He's not that senile yet."
I wanted to make sure he knew.
Oh, God. So I'm in here with the big head Waddle. Also, somebody left me the book Off Mike. Mike Doc Emmerich. This is awesome, with a foreword by Eddie Olchek. So whoever left this for me, I really appreciate it. You know what? It's only 269 pages, so I could probably read it.
Nice.
The print's kind of small, and there are very few pictures, so it might take me a while.
How many different adjectives for shooting the puck are there?
I got to steal some of them.
Well, there should be at the back of it, they should have added more pages to list every adjective he's used in a hockey game.
Oh, I know. Okay, we got plenty of pictures right here. Okay.
So that just came out, right? That book is new. He's retired. Did he time this, the retirement, with the book release or something like that?
I think so. Triumph Books. Here it is. So thank you very much, whoever left it. I mean, if someone left it by mistake, I'm stealing it. So
Marky is brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, as always. LaSalle and the River. Absolutely awesome and taking all the precautions. So have confidence when you head to Chicago Cut Steakhouse. They still have the red carpet. It's just really, really cleaned well these days. and they're making sure everything's right. And if you want to carry out, whatever, David Flom and Maddie Moore do things right.
I'm telling you, we could still do the take my table and move it to Chelios's boat.
It's a little cold for boat weather these days.
Yeah, we'll put one of those big heating towers on there.
Though I think tomorrow isn't it supposed to get back into the 70s tomorrow?
Who knows? It's roller coaster. It's 70, then it's 50, then it's 45, then it's 90.
Yeah, it's basically winter after this weekend something like
that.
So
how are you feeling, man?
I'm good. Everything's good. I mean, we had a lot of interesting Bears talk. We unbanned audio from this radio station today. So I think it was a kind of a monumental day. On ESPN 1000. Do you know the band audio story?
I just know a lot of stations are selling their bandwidth. What happened here?
This isn't bandwidth stuff.
Okay.
This is Cap. When Cap went on to apologize last year about Trubisky playing so poorly, mm-hmm. telling everyone he's sorry that he was wrong about Trubisky, a week later he banned the audio. And we were allowed to play it. And we had
to
play it.
What do you mean not allowed?
I know.
How does he get that say?
Right. He was very mad at me last year at the party.
Why is he the Grand Imperial Poobah of ESPN? You just play it.
Because today he finally pronounced Mitch a bust.
Oh, wow. Hey, thanks for catching up. Jeez. So the world's okay now that he's acknowledged that. Cap's acknowledged it, so it's official. Does Nagy know that Mitch can't play anymore because Cap acknowledged it? Even in an emergency?
Yeah.
Okay.
You what's on your mind? What are you fired up about today?
I'm actually watching the World Series. I'm actually excited about it. Cody Bellinger is completely out of his mind.
He's good.
And today we had a great bit. The Spanish play-by-play guy on Fox Deportes, Adrian Garcia Marquez, I believe is his name. He does the whole home run call, and at the end, he switches to English and goes, "In my belly."
Oh, that is great.
So that's a great Bastardo Gordo reference right there.
I saw that he had, like, that it was on Twitter. I was scrolling, but I think maybe my wife was falling asleep, and I didn't want to put the volume up, so I never heard it. Can we pull that before we leave, Black? Maybe get that. Maybe it's even in the system, but that's pretty
funny.
It's
in our system. Just steal it from downstairs.
Yeah.
So also, I was entertained by Cairo Santos' explanation of how he became a kicker, which is the path for a lot of, you know, Hispanic kids or kids growing up in other countries. You know, they play soccer. He played soccer in Brazil, and he was really good. And then he billeted with an American family over here, I believe, in Florida. And his billet brother, the kid who he lived with, was a football player. So they're just fooling around with basketballs and footballs one day. And, you know, Cairo kicks one of like five houses down the block. And his buddy says, "You got to try out for our football team." So he goes, he kicks a 50-yarder first day in tryouts. And the coach says, "You're on the team and you're playing Friday.
You've made it."
Yeah. And so, you know, he said he had to get a copy of Madden to learn the rules of the NFL, which I thought was great. It was awesome.
See, I'm still not. I've been burnt about getting hyped about a kicker, you know, or thinking
that it's
been
hyped about a kicker ever.
Right. Or thinking, let's put it this way. Okay, let me take that back because you're right. I don't want to buy in yet that the kicking situation is solved. Right. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
I Robbie was too steady for too long, and we've gone through too much that I need to see like a year of this in big games before I can truly believe that he's going to continue to do what he's been doing.
Well, I know, and this weekend it happened again. Every time Robbie'd come out and kick a field goal, I don't care who's carrying the game, every announcer says, "Boy, you know, the Bears regret letting him go."
Yeah.
And he's still got a huge leg, and he's rock solid, and he's a cool dude. He's making a lot of money still.
He is, sure. Yeah.
So good for him.
One of the best guys out there, too.
You guys want to hear the Bellinger call?
Yeah, let's hear this.
Hold on. Buffering?
Michael Buffering?
No, Buffering.
So this is the Spanish.
Bellinger la prende. Vuela la pelota. Vuela la pelota. Baba y pelota. Le pago unas vacaciones a Doña Blanca por todo el derecho central. Su cuarto bambinazo de la postemporada. Get in my belly. Otra vez, Cody Bellinger.
Qué tremendo tablazo.
That is fantastic. That's one of the best calls ever.
Is great. Yeah. Well, he's good. He's very good.
Oh, boy.
And that obviously he does soccer, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I keep going to the baseball games, and if the game is good, I'll keep it on. But as soon as it becomes like a 6-1 game, like yesterday's game was.
You start drifting?
I go somewhere. I go to Netflix then. I go to streaming. I'm just not as into these games as I once was.
I hear you. And what's really baffling to me, all during the pandemic, people quarantined and shut in, TV ratings for all sports are down.
Right.
It's amazing to me. So I think people would rather binge watch shows and movies and things like that. Our culture is really changing. It really, really
is. It is. Because I know I've got a show ready to be watched on the other channel if this game gets out of hand. That's why it's like, okay, get my attention, be a good game, and if it's not, I'm out.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I always have to check in. You got to do your homework. You got to know what's going on. But I'm not so thoroughly entertained as I used to be. Maybe it's just oversaturation for me because I'm 100 and I'm senile and I've been doing this for 98 years, Adam.
See, but once back.
And, you know, so I'm like, I'm kind of burned out. So I need to cleanse the palate and go to something non-sports.
How much of this do you guys think has to do with we had no sports for a long time? And then we got everything at once.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, it's so segmented and splintered in what you're actually consuming. You know, I mean, like, the NBA ratings are down.
Yes.
But LeBron was in the finals, and usually LeBron rates in the finals.
Sure.
It's not like food. You can't store it.
Right. You know? Right.
No, exactly. Black, I wanted to have this conversation last week, but we had so much going on. I think it's everything. It's the political election year. Sports is always down. It's always mm-hmm. down. Every 4 years, it's down. I think getting everything at once. I think no fans in the stands. A lot of people in these research things have said because it's not an exciting atmosphere that they're watching, they tend to not get as excited. And then it's sports isn't as exciting to them.
Yeah, it's human nature. I mean, can you imagine the World Series now? No fans. It's so weird. And just take it to another level. Super Bowl without fans is going to be just like, what? Now, I'm sure there will be some.
Right.
If not a full.
Oh, no, not
a full. A full complement of fans.
I can't imagine. Like, they had, what, 11,000 yesterday? It was the lowest crowd since, like, Ty Cobb played in the World Series.
What I do enjoy about lack of fans is you can hear swearing on the field, which is awesome.
And then, they bleep it out. You guys should let the swearers go.
It gets through. A lot of it gets through.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the guys, you know, in the booth have to apologize all the time.
Well, yeah, that's true. They do have to apologize. All right. I got some more stuff for you coming up. If you want to talk to Markey, 312-332-3776.
Let's talk about trading the entire Blackhawks core. How about that?
Oh, yeah. You know, we've not asked you about this.
Please do.
I want to get to Stan Bowman, and he is now being open about the rebuild. That's coming up with Markey next. Mark Gene Greco's in our First Midwest Bank studio. You can watch on Twitch anytime to all the local shows, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago.
Okay, we just figured out that this is Yurko's book, Off Mic, the Mike Doc Emmerich story. But he doesn't really read things, so no, I'm just going to take it anyway.
I don't think Yurko would mind if you borrowed the book
or owned the book. I saw him today. We had a nice conversation in the
hallway. What did he have to say? I haven't seen Yurko.
We were talking about property taxes, actually.
Oh, really?
And he lives in Indiana, so he pays nothing.
Right.
While I pay $1 billion a year.
He flaunts it all the time,
yes,
too.
Yes, he does.
In Indiana. Twice the house, half the taxes, I believe is his phrase.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So what about this Hawk story? Yesterday, Stan Bowman was doing interviews with everybody. They released the tweet and the email to their fan base, letting them know where they are in the rebuild.
Well, first of all, to issue a letter to your fans and ask them to be patient, that's lame. I think that's pretty lame. And if you're going to do a rebuild, do a complete, total, rip-down, tear-down rebuild. Instead of this half-assed, pick-up redundant, generic free agents and plug them in here and there, just try to, you know, plug the dam for a couple of years. Then you have your core who are going to be denied probably, you know, playoff appearances for the next couple of years, the last 2 years of their deals. Give them a chance to win a cup somewhere else, you know. But the problem is the contracts. So, you know, they're stuck. I'd love to see Patrick Kane go to Buffalo and bail out the Sabres. I'd love to see Jonathan Toews go back to Winnipeg and help a great Jets organization. Duncan Keith is a bargain. He's making $5.5 million a year. He signed that long 13-year deal. He's a bargain. Somebody could still,
even at his age right now,
somebody could still use a quality veteran defenseman. He's not going to be your first liner, but, you know, he could be, you know, third, fourth pairing and help some young guys. Brent Seabrook, you're stuck with him in that deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they just got themselves in a situation where the Ice Hogs are producing nothing. Their AHL farm team, their system is pretty much bare. They have nothing. So,
but what do you do? Like, I get it, because you like these guys. You like Kane and Toews. But what about for the Blackhawks fan? Do you think they want to see Patrick Kane go?
I think if you just come up front and say, look, we're going to tear this whole thing down, and we have to say goodbye to our superstars who won us three cups. I think a lot of people will say, okay, I'll wait, I'll be patient, and I'll try not to complain if that's the way you're going to go. But this is kind of just a half-assed gray area thing, like, we're sort of rebuilding, but we're trying to win a few games. Or, you know, you can't have it both ways. So I don't know. It's all about the development of the guys they've acquired and the guys they have. So, you know, there's not too much in the pipeline.
I'll never forget when they made the John McDonough move. I said, we kept getting tweets. What about Stan? Why is Stan still here? And my response on the air was, don't worry. When the season's over, They're going to hire a hockey. They're going to hire a new president. The new president will fire the GM and hire his own general manager. And that completely changed. Like, or I was just completely wrong about that. I don't know if COVID had something to do with it. But now Stan gets to stay, and he's the guy overseeing the rebuild?
I think COVID does have something to do with it, and everybody's revenue is down. You heard that business minute of the NBA losing all that money, even though they did a great job with the bubble and at least recoup some of it. Everybody's losing money, and you can imagine NHL teams more so than the other top four leagues. So I get that. It's all a budget thing. But I think also Stan has Danny Wirtz's ear, and as he looks for a permanent president, I think Stan has gotten to Rocky's son, and they're willing to let him stay for that reason. So whatever. I know, you know, he said he had a conversation, Stan did yesterday, with the Corps, with the four veterans, and explained to them what they're trying to do. And at the end of that, he said, I think they understand what we're trying to accomplish now. There's no way that they're satisfied with that explanation.
You think Taves is still pissed?
I think he really is. But you know what? In Taves' situation, he has dual citizenship, and I believe he wants to get into politics after he's finished playing. He might just want to stay here in Chicago. What better place to cut your teeth on the political
scene? Really? I didn't know that. He wants to get into politics?
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. So, you know, there's that factor, but I don't know why he'd want to do that. He's too clean. He's too good of a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what we didn't talk about today? And this is good for Abdallah and Black, too. And they're coming up for an hour before the World Series. But we did not bring up the Odell Beckham story where LSU banned Odell Beckham for 2 years from their facilities or their activities for handing out those $100 bills after they won the championship.
Right. Well, it took them long enough to do that. But once again, you could argue the other side. The NCAA is so hypocritical, and all the violations are really kind of petty, relatively speaking. So you got to clean it. Pay the players, okay? It's not enough just to give them a scholarship, free room and board. They don't go to class anyway. Just pay them a salary because you're making trillions off these kids.
Plus, it's not fair to the fans of LSU. First, they got to deal with a crappy team, and now this. Like, what are they going to do? Roll Tide.
Oh, my God. Of course, we're talking about the southern regions of the great United States where people will die without football, without college football.
Well, it's all back now.
You kidding me? When Saban supposedly, before he got his, before we found out it was a false positive, the flags were at half-mast.
Oh, false positive. And then I don't care if it was a positive, ultra positive. He gets a private jet. They test him 3 times within an hour or whatever. They circumvent every protocol to get him back on the field.
Of course. Why not?
It's unbelievable.
If they got the money, why not? What difference does it make? You're not paying for
it. It's just, oh, my God. It's unreal. He's the Pope.
You think that if you had a false positive, that ABC wouldn't pay for you to fly around and get tested so you could come back and do the 10:30?
I think I can guarantee they would not.
Okay.
They'd say, you want to retire early? See you later.
Maybe in 2005.
You know what? You caused us a lot of problems. Now you're sick. Get out. by the way, is this true? The Big Ten, unlike the SEC, if you test positive, whether you're a player, coach, administrator, trainer, whatever, you're out 24 days, not 14.
Really? 24 days?
I think so.
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
Well, you might be right, but I haven't seen that. Because I know Purdue, Jeff Brohm tested positive, and his is confirmed positive.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be away for at least 2 weeks.
He's a Purdue head coach.
But he's trying he filed a petition to try to coach remotely for the game.
I think they should be allowed to. Again, I brought that up about Saban.
That's technology. I don't know if you're...
If you could be in the booth with all the technology in the world, during COVID, what's the big deal if you're at home?
I think you should have to be in your coach's outfit with a headset with AstroTurf in your house, and you have to have fake fans behind you, and you have to yell and scream and throw stuff.
How much fun would that be if we got, like, a coach's cam in their house coaching the game?
And we could have the kids on the couch in the back.
That would be great.
Yeah, you know, have Gatorade stacked up on the table.
Every
once in a while, have a kid run into the table and knock over all the Gatorade.
If Hugh Freeze can coach from a hospital bed up in the up in the booth,
Why not?
You saw there was that high school coach that had a crane brought in.
Yeah.
And he showed up in the crane up top in like the cherry picker and was up there coaching.
Right.
And watching.
If the kids are acting up while you're on the air, you send them to the tent. They go in the little tent to be examined.
where they get examined.
And if it's Mason, he's just screaming whole game.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Marky, we'll talk to you Friday.
You got it, guys. See ya.
There you go. Mark G. Greco brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. Black Abdallah are coming up. You guys are on for an hour, correct?
Yep, so, right up until the game two of the World
like
Series
55 minutes
the
too long.
Dodgers and the Rays.
You stop it, Mark. Thank you to Black and Abdallah for producing and hosting with me today. And for Marky, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Wednesday night.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfort.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about.